rcstyle.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. In just over a week, Charlotte voters go to the polls. Actually, early voting begins shortly to select a mayor and members of city council. If you haven't been paying close attention, you might think those were the only two races. But in fact, there's another one that may be more important to many, many people, and that is the school board race. There are three at-large seats up for grabs, with nine candidates vying for those seats, two incumbents, seven challengers. What makes this race important is the fact that the new board will face some challenging and important decisions. They'll be drawing new boundaries for schools and selecting the next superintendent, among other things. WFAE's Lisa Wharf covers schools for us, and Ann Doss Helms is the longtime education reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Both are in our studio for the hour to dissect the issues and shed light on the candidates. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Lisa is on vacation, and she still came in. So thank you
thanks,
as well.
Thanks for the kudos.
There are nine people running, Lisa. Who are the two incumbents?
The two incumbents are the chairman of the board now, Mary McCray, and Erica Ellis Stewart.
And of the seven challengers, how many of them, if any of them, have school board experience or any kind of experience with the education system here?
Several of them have ties with education. And have been, you know, for example, Elise Dashew, you've heard her name a lot as far as trying to mobilize parents for several different causes. There's a candidate, Janine Bryant, who's spent a few years as a teacher through Teach for America and is also doing some sort of advocacy and leadership with Teach for America folks. There's quite an array of people who have been paying attention to school board education stuff.
Amelia Stinson-Wesley has
served
a term on
Thank
the board.
You for the
it
reminder.
Was an appointed term, but she spent 2 years on the school board, then did not run for the district seat and is now running for the first time.
So most, if not all of them, have some interface with schools and some major interest in the schools and the school systems.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There are three seats on the line, and two incumbents are running. Is this really only a race for the third seat?
Well, that is sort of the standard wisdom. There is a lot of power of incumbency, and both Eric Ellis Stewart and Mary McCray ran very strong 4 years ago. I think if we were having this conversation a year ago, it would have been a no-brainer that, of course, the incumbents are getting in, and it's just to see who replaces Tim Morgan, who is not running. But this last year has been a really interesting year for Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools. And they went from a board that was kind of viewed as the no-drama board, the board that was doing very well. They were getting national accolades. And about this time a year ago, the board's attorney came to them and said, I've done an investigation, and you've got some big problems with your superintendent, and these are firing offenses. And that kind of sweeps all the cards off the table and deals a new hand that's very difficult to play. And
well,
they have arguably not played it.
Yes, I was going to ask you how this might affect Mary McCray, because she's the chair of the school board, and the school board has been accused or criticized for not handling that very well. And they have not come clean as to why they did what they did, nor did they come clean about the original announcement about why Keith Morrison was leaving, and then they shifted gears and changed their minds and gave a different excuse, and no one's ever explained any of that.
Right, and I think what happened was that they made a decision that, okay, we have this bad situation. The best possible alternative is to cook up a story that he's going home to care for his mom, and because if people knew about this, it would damage the district. And you could have a really lively ethical discussion about whether that was a good strategy, if it had worked, but who thought it was going to work? I mean, of course, the truth came out, and now then the question became, why did they not level with the public? Do we really have the full truth? Is there something still out there that hasn't been disclosed?
Well, I'd like to hear from both of you on this. The idea that whatever happened with Heath Morrison might damage the district, we really don't know, really, what happened with Heath Morrison, really, which is more damaging, the fact that we don't know or what he possibly did or didn't do. Did that make any sense to you?
I think it did. And I feel like we have a pretty good handle on what happened. There's always people that say, you guys haven't dug deep enough, there's something else. There were all sorts of wild and crazy rumors floating around in that interval between the story that nobody quite believed and the reporting. But I kind of feel like if there had been another big explosive thing, it would have worked its way to the surface now. So then the question you have is the things that they raised, which was basically the way he treated staff in general and one staff member in particular, and whether he failed to fully disclose the costs of a new school building.
Mm-hmm.
It seems weird that that led to such an immediate divorce from the school board and from this relationship that seems to have been going so well. So,
but doesn't that say that there's something else going on under the surface? Because it didn't make any sense. Why wouldn't you just slap him on the hand and say, don't let this ever happen again?
I mean, there are certainly a lot of questions still hanging in the air.
Because he was a shining star when he came in here.
People loved him, and it was a very – including the board, and it was a very abrupt turnaround. So there's certainly questions, but a lot of – and certainly, there's been a lot of reports out there about how this happened. But
well, why hasn't this been an issue in this race? I haven't heard anybody talk about it at all.
I think it is probably, but sort of in the spillover because they moved – Deputy Ann Clark stepped in immediately to take over the duties, and then in, I believe, January, they signed a contract with her, a year-and-a-half contract, and it's a very odd contract in that it says that she is the superintendent. It doesn't say that she is the interim superintendent or the acting superintendent, but then it specifically has a no long-term position consideration clause and says that the board agrees that it will not consider Clark for nor offer Clark the long-term position.
And that's changed. Because now they are thinking that maybe they should.
It certainly seems that way. Nobody's coming right out and saying it, but nobody's putting that to rest, either Ann Clark or the board. And so you have kind of this void of discussion about what they're doing next.
We're going to talk about that a little bit later on. There, of the nine people running, seven identify as Democrats. One is a Republican. One is an independent. Given that, is the balance of the board likely to be upset in any way, politically or philosophically or in any way, by the outcome of this election?
There's two Democrats right now who are in those at-large positions. So it's that last one. And Tim Morgan
is a Republican.
Yes. So,
He's leaving.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Jeremy Stevenson, who is the only Republican, is very clearly positioning himself to take over that voice of sort of the suburbs, of the Republicans, of I think what he would probably consider the silent majority in terms of this whole student assignment question, which I'm sure we'll get into more. But there's been a very vocal contingent saying diversity is the issue. We've got to deal with these concentrations of poverty and this racial isolation. And he's saying not so fast on that. We don't want to disrupt what's working. So I think the biggest balance shift would be if somehow the two incumbents got voted out and you had any three others. That would be such a strong message. I don't think that's very likely to happen. I would certainly not bet my paycheck on that. But whoever gets in, there's going to be some talk about what this means, about what the voters think.
Now, the Observer did background checks on all the mayoral candidates and found some dirt under the rug.
Quite a bit, yeah.
In some cases.
They were fun.
But you say that your investigation of the candidates for school board, they're squeaky clean, all of them. But you wrote that records show that Elise Dashew and Jeremy Stevenson, though running as a Democrat and a Republican, respectively, have voted in both parties' primaries. What are we to take from that?
I think we take from that that they were independents, and
okay.
They don't deny that. I have voted in both parties' primaries, and I'm registered unaffiliated.
And the school board is nonpartisan. They don't put the parties that these people associate with on the ballot, so why even put that in a report? Why report on it?
Well, it definitely plays out in the campaigning. 4 years ago, you had kind of this messy situation where I think it was maybe the first time that they had more Republicans than seats. So the Republican Party got kind of messy arguing over, which ones they would promote. And the Democratic Party in the past has chosen and said, these three are the ones that we would encourage you to vote for. And they have told me that this year they're not going to do that. So the seven Democrats may have, some challenges distinguishing because they, in many ways, not always, and certainly their backgrounds are very different, but their positions are not dramatically different necessarily.
Until recently, the tradition at the county commission was the leading vote getter among the at-large candidates, I believe, would become the chair of the county commission. How does it work on the school board? Who selects the chair of the school board?
I mean, it's often the leading vote getter, but I think there's also a vote, right, on the board itself. So it's not
just the board votes, and there's a lot of behind-the-scenes drama about it.
Because these are four-year terms, and they're staggered, so that this year we have these three seats open.
Right.
Next year we'll have more seats.
Two years from now we'll have more
seats open.
And there was a sense for a while that it should be an at-large member because that person was elected by the entire county. And then Eric Davis a few years ago had a very strong showing in a district race, and he became the chairman for a couple of years. 4 years ago after the at-large election, Eric Ellis Stewart became the chair and Mary McRae became the vice chair. They had been the top two vote-getters, and that was kind of – but that really created a lot of tension because you had two brand-new people, both Democrats, and – there was a segment of the board that felt like we've just been shut out. And then they followed up by choosing the District 6 representative, and they chose Amelia Stinson Wesley, who is a Democrat for a highly Republican district. So I think that kind of shows that there are challenges there, that if it's too much, our party is in charge, boom, step out of the way, we're running things, that then you risk alienating. And that's especially going into student assignment. That's a huge question, is how you really bring in all the different voices in this community, because we aren't unified around one idea.
Right. The Charlotte-Mecklenburg Association of Educators has endorsed the two incumbents, Mary McRae and Erica Ellis Stewart, along with Elise Dashew. What is that group, and how much weight should they or do they carry?
Well, I mean, they are a group composed of teachers, and of course we don't have unions here, but it's an association. And, you know, Mary McRae used to be head of that group, and she got in, and I think they have some way. You know, I don't know how strong that way is. But
yeah, they're actually the two groups. There's also the Classroom Teachers Association, and neither one releases membership numbers, but... And there's no way of knowing how many CMS employees get out and vote, but they have more than 18,000 employees, and one might assume that they're pretty highly motivated. And that's one of the big challenges here. You know, if you think, I think the percentage of people who have an opinion about Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools is very high, but the percentage of people who vote is quite low. So it's not just what do we think about these guys sitting around talking about them. It's who is going to get out and vote and actually, you know, push those levers.
Now, Elise Dashew is the co-founder of an organization called MEC Future and co-leader of Charlotte-Mecklenburg Public School Friends. She's run for the board before. Would her close association through outside organizations give her an understanding of this system, the fact that she's been in the weeds, so to speak? Would it give her a leg up?
Yeah, I think she's definitely paid her dues. She's been active. She's attended meetings. She's done some of the less glamorous things. None of these organizations are particularly active now, but during those times that we all remember when there were layoffs going on and there were budget cuts and she was advocating for the school system. So, yeah, that's kind of the traditional path to school board leadership is you do these appointed things, you do these volunteer things, and then eventually you get elected.
You know, this is for a city that talks a lot about the schools, and we've been doing this for 30, 40, 50 years now. We've been talking a lot about the public school system. And because of the churn of superintendents recently and some of the controversies surrounding that, you would think that this and some of the issues facing the school board, like pupil assignment, which we'll talk about later in this program, you would think that this would be really the most vocally talked about thing going on right now. And it's not. It's been eerily quiet. Is that my impression? Is it an inaccurate impression? Or is that actually what's been happening? And I have 15 seconds.
I think there's been a lot of talk about superintendents, but there hasn't been very much movement on the board to actually get this process in gear.
We'll talk about that when we come back, because that's one of the serious issues facing the next board superintendent. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Blumenthal Performing Arts, presenting the Reduced Shakespeare Company's The Complete History of Comedy, Abridged, from Shakespeare to The Daily Show, November 5th through 7th at Booth Playhouse. Tickets at blumenthalarts.org. Human history is full of periods of upheaval. People, communities, organizations, systems fall, fail, they fall apart, or they die. Sometimes those same things bounce back. They adapt. They thrive. So what's the difference between those that do and those that don't? After a considerable amount of study, Andrew Zolli and Anne-Marie Healy have come up with a theory. It's called resilience. Zolli joins us to talk about why things bounce back tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Vice President Biden considers a run for president. Congressman Ryan lays out conditions for becoming a House Speaker. Uncertainty in both parties and what it means for gridlock in Congress and the 2016 election.
That's the Diane Rehm Show coming up next from 10 to noon on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with WFAE's Lisa Wharf, the education reporter here, and Ann Doss Helms, the longtime education reporter for the Charlotte Observer. We're talking about the school board race, and we'll be segueing into some of the things that the school board next year will take up, like the search for a new superintendent and pupil assignment and some other issues involving magnet schools and the like. I want to just come back to the question I asked just prior to the break, because we didn't have time to really dwell on it with 15 seconds left in the segment. But this has been a very quiet campaign. We've heard a lot. There have been lots of debates between the mayoral candidates and the runoff and whatnot. The Observer just did a mayoral debate last night with WBTV. But this is a city that talks more about school. Even the mayor candidates are talking about schools, and they have
that's
nothing
been
to,
the oddest thing.
They
yeah.
have nothing to do with it. The city
they're evidently
nothing.
Running for superintendent.
That's right. So, but because we talk so much about schools in this community, why is this race pretty quiet? I just don't hear much about it.
One theory is that the focus doesn't really crank up until after the primaries are over. And I think part of it is somehow that we connect with a one-on-one drama. When there's one person who's going to win a race, we focus on the mayor. And, you know, I'm not unbiased on this. So in the newsroom, I'm always saying, hello, you know, my race affects a much broader segment of the county and larger dollars, larger workforce, larger everything. But nine people are just kind of hard to get your head around, and they're the board, and they're the board that makes really huge decisions, which is what you always argue, but people still don't necessarily vote. Then when we hire a superintendent, I think that becomes sort of the face of CMS, and that some of the energy that accrues around the mayor's office, I think, also accrues around the superintendent of schools.
In years past, it's been a kind of a very divisive situation with certain parts of the county bringing people to the board who really had a very different viewpoint about how public schools should be operated, and it was almost a clash, and there were people who really wanted to break up the system into smaller districts, etc. That seems to have all died down. This seems to be very calm now, is it?
Well, so Larry Baumgartner, who's run several times, he's a candidate now, and he's run before on a platform that, yeah, we need to break up, the district into different areas. And he said, I asked him about that. I said, I don't hear you saying that this time. He said, well, it really didn't seem to have much momentum in the last race I ran in. You're not hearing that so much these days.
Larry Baumgartner is the Republican candidate.
No,
he's not.
Unaffiliated.
Yeah.
Jeremy Stevenson.
Okay. One of the key decisions that this new board will have to make will be on the next superintendent. Have any of the candidates or other members of the board given any indication on which direction they're going to go with this? Because, as you pointed out, Ann, there's a clause in the contract with Ann Clark that she will not be considered and she will not run. Not so much anymore. That may be not true anymore.
Yeah, I think they could revise that legally. Yeah. I'm not a lawyer, but there would certainly be some repercussions to that. And I think this sort of long silence has let people fill in with speculation. And we saw at the last school board meeting some people who were very upset by the idea that this was potentially happening behind closed doors without the public input. So I think that they have gotten into a position where it's going to be really tough. The big tension is that reviewing student assignment is a full-time, overwhelming task that requires a lot of public engagement, and hiring a superintendent is a full-time, highly demanding task that requires a lot of public engagement. And I think everybody who's been watching, including the school board members, have gone, maybe we shouldn't be doing both at the same time. Maybe we need to pick one or the other, but they haven't.
And which do you do first? Do you bring a superintendent in and let them handle the pupil reassignment, or do you hand them the new assignment plan and say, deal with it?
Right.
What do you do first?
Yeah, I mean, that's been the debate you hear. I mean, because and I think the board is really trying to figure that out. I mean, how much do you want a superintendent to come in and has a vision? And, you know, student assignment, drawing boundary lines is a big part of a district's vision. And how much do you want to sort of circumscribe that vision before a superintendent comes in? So, I mean, and Clark's contract runs up this summer.
Yeah, July.
And they have to have, I mean, the student assignment plan has to go in over the next year and a half. They don't have to implement it
unless
then.
They were to say, we're just pushing, you know, there's no
exactly
law that they have to have it done. This is their self-imposed time frame. But they don't seem to be able to set that priority. And I think the people who want to extend Ann Clark's contract would say, this is the solution. We give her another 2 or 3 years, and we pursue student assignment, and then we follow the superintendent search in a more orderly fashion that we don't feel rushed. We don't, you know, have
well,
this mix.
Heath Morrison left a year ago. Speaking of not feeling rushed, have they done anything? Have they hired a search firm?
No.
Have they begun a search? Have they read a resume yet?
They've talked about whether to hire a search firm, and that was several months ago, and they have not picked up that conversation.
Yeah, they kind of had this meeting and said, well, you know, and then I wrote a column about Mary McCray, said, well, here's your homework assignment. She literally used that term and said, send me these thoughts, and they just didn't.
Could it be that they're waiting for this new board to come on? So, because the new board will have to deal with whomever the superintendent ends up being, and they're going to let this new board choose their own person. Could that be what they're waiting for?
Well, it's part of it. And the more perhaps cynical interpretation is that they don't want to make an unpopular decision during the campaign, and every decision will be unpopular. They actually, the search that led to Heath Morrison's hiring, they were in the middle of it during a campaign. And the board changed, and literally Mary and Erica took over as the point people in the search in midstream. So it's not that that can't be done. It's that they're choosing not to do it. I think another part of the dynamic is...
So was Heath, Mary, and Erica's choice? Did they?
It was a unanimous vote, but yes, they led that search. That was the weird thing, was that... And always there's some wrangling behind the scenes.
Right.
You know, there were people who wanted to choose Ann over Heath Morrison, and they kind of arm wrestled behind the scenes and came out unanimous, which is what always happens.
Well, at a recent school board meeting, a number of people came forward to make their desires known without mentioning any names. I think it was a rule. They couldn't directly Why was that, by the way?
The names or the even job title, superintendent.
Why?
Don't respond. And to have a person potentially go on the air, and this is, you know, it is televised, and say, my teacher, Mike Collins, is a horrible person because he flunked my child. Or what? You know, you don't want that dynamic.
Okay. But sure, that takes on a different tone when you were talking about the superintendent of the district. I mean, if there's not a public forum, you know, where is the right way to bring up these concerns? And so this is how the board dealt with it.
So we're going to hear from two of the people who spoke. First up is Colette Forrest, a CMS parent who has been leading the charge against the current superintendent. She urged the board to find someone who will, quote, bring the community together instead of tearing us apart, in her words. She wants someone who has demonstrated an ability to lead a winning team and not just be part of a team.
We have had some great successes in CMS because we have some awesome teachers and support staff in CMS. But we must have the right unifying person at the helm to ensure all children's success. The predicament we find ourselves in, with the majority of our schools marked by racial, social, and economic segregation, and widespread distrust of CMS, leadership, and ability to effectively address the challenges that we face, requires that we select a superintendent who is truly capable of giving all parts of Charlotte the fresh start it desperately deserves and needs. From student assignment to funding challenges, the road ahead requires a united front with a unifying person. I hold no personal animosity for anyone, but make no mistake about it, this is a fight for survival for all children within CMS. Their academic and their scholastic future depend on you getting this right. So I ask you, for my baby's sake and all of these children, we must close this chapter and start anew with a process to have a new superintendent. Thank you.
She's very passionate about this, and she has, as I said, been leading the charge. Why?
I mean, there's the thought, and she said She said, hey, she had a part in the school closings in 2010, and there were 10 schools that were closed to save money.
She being Ann Clark.
Yes, Ann Clark, she says, was part of the administration. And she was certainly part of the administration as far as the closing part of it. I mean, you never saw her out front in any of this. And it's hard to determine, you know, what role, if any, she had in this plan. I mean, it was Dr. Gorman and Eric Davis were big parts of.
Has she had an opportunity to say what her role was in that plan? Because we had two superintendents dealing with this, and she wasn't the superintendent at all. So could she just say?
She was not. And when I talked with her about it, she said, I was part of the leadership team.
Uh-huh.
That was not – and clearly, I was covering it. She was not in the role of – this was very much the facilities planners and the people who were handling the data and presenting it. That was not her department. It was basically a board and superintendent decision. So the school board is really the one that owns that ultimately.
Did the closing of those schools lead to the racial, social, and economic separation that Colette Forrest talked about when she was speaking a moment ago?
No, it was there. But it exacerbated the feeling that the people who traditionally get shut out of power, the minorities, the lower income people, the people who don't have clout, felt like they got stepped on in that process.
And that's
process.
The trust issue that
that's
she
the trust
was talking
issue.
About.
They and you talked about them. The silence and not hearing from the people who want to split off the suburbs. You tend to hear from people who feel the most threatened or feel the most imperiled by whatever is going on. And I think the most recent group to really feel like they got stepped on were those people who were part of the communities that saw their schools close. And you saw an influx of people at school board meetings and in demonstrations that were not, you know, kind of the same 30 or 40 people that we all know by name.
Mm-hmm.
As student assignment moves forward and they make specific decisions, the people who are pretty happy now, if they face big change, I think you will hear from them. Now, whether that'll play out as, the suburbs want to secede again or don't force busing on us or somehow we can finally come to this consensus that there's an approach that we all can agree on that benefits everyone. Wouldn't that be nice? There's a lot still to come.
Well, on the other side of the polarization here, I guess you'd call it, was Stick Williams with the Duke Energy Foundation and co-chair of Project Lift. And he, although he didn't mention her name, wants Ann Clark to stay on.
During the short number of years, though, that we have planned and executed Project Lift, we're working with our fourth superintendent. And just the thought of starting another search and then following that search with an appointment and then possibly another year of a listening tour just scares the living daylights out of me. What I wanted to come to stand before you to suggest is that stability and leadership can accomplish a great deal. And I'm asking that you consider stability and giving yourself a chance to see through these great initiatives that you've already launched and then determine, you know, what your process is going to be long-term and in the future. But right now, I think stability is critical for this school district.
We're about to elect our fifth mayor in, what, 3 years? and our third superintendent of schools in X number of years. We've had a lot of turnover in key positions here. How important is stability at this point in time? Is it better to have stability or is it better to get a fresh face in there who will bring a new perspective?
It kind of depends how you think the district has been doing, whether you think the direction is a good one or not.
Are these two people representative of the temperature of the room that night? Was it equally divided between people who would like a new person versus people who would like Ann Clark to have a shot at it permanently?
Well, the room was not packed with people on Ann Clark. The room was actually most of the people there had to do, again, with specific decisions relating to their magnet programs or what have you. So, again, I think it sort of reflects what you're saying, is that there's relatively small groups on both sides, and I do think that the power structures, the people like Stick Williams who are part of the decision-making process are probably more keen on Ann Clark, and the people out there feeling shut out may be more resistant.
Well there is a movement, is there not, Lisa, to get her gone, to find somebody new, and there's also a movement to keep her.
Yeah, I mean, you hear that, but you also don't hear people in the position to make that decision saying much about it. You have two school board candidates who have been upfront and said, Jeremy Stevenson said, hey, I think she would be great. We need to have her. And then you've had Lavester Flowers who says, no, you know, my supporters do not like her. And if I get in, I would not vote for her.
But here's a woman who's been in the system for a long time. She was a candidate. She was rumored to be a candidate. Wasn't she not? Was she not a candidate
she
at some
was.
Point?
She was. She was one of the, the three finalists for the last round.
So she knows where the bodies are buried. She understands the system. She understands the city. Isn't there something to be said for that?
And it does get to that stability versus new. And the way to really be, you know, extremely optimistic and unblemished is you come in from the outside and you do a great job of selling yourself and you do a great job of selling what you're going to do. And the frustrating reality is that there's no sort of program that's A, that's really totally new and different, and B, that's going to just solve all the problems. So kind of the pattern is a superintendent comes in, launches, and then
And you also, I mean, there's also this sense that the school board got burned with Heath Morrison, that you had that situation where, you know, there was this guy shiny and came in outside, and then, you know, something happened.
And he didn't have much of a track record.
No.
He was very, very charismatic and energetic, and that was true.
And
that,
some on the board have said that they've warned about not falling for the charismatic choice, which is
exactly.
obviously a reference to
exactly. Heath. When they talk about superintendents, you know, the advice that was given them and that they wholeheartedly said, yep, you're right. You know, charisma doesn't run a district.
So it raises the question of how much you rely on rely on a search firm.
So what have the candidates said about what they'd like to see Ann Clark versus somebody else?
They've been really reticent to say
how are we supposed to make a decision if we don't know about the key, how they feel on a key issue?
Well, although I think you could also say that's not a snap decision. You come in and you weigh. They may or may not know whether Ann is truly willing. They, you know, it's certainly going to depend. Nobody's running for dictator. So there is some validity to the idea that, and a lot of them are saying, I think we need to have a good process. We need to engage the public.
Is the public normally engaged in these decisions? I mean, what?
It is, but you know, one of the things they talked about in this process too is at what point do you bring the public in? Do you bring them in on the front end where you don't have the three candidates yet? And so people are talking about what they want to see in a superintendent, or do you bring them in on the back end? For example, there were public interviews in front of lots of people, and the public could ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
So there's certainly public engagement, and, you know, depends how much the CMS board listens to it.
Is this something that can be done in a year? Because Ann's contract ends in July, and unless they keep her, or unless she agrees to an extension, and she's not, and she knows going into the extension that she may or may not be the full-time forever person, are they up against a wall here? Can you accomplish this in the time allotted?
They probably can, but the clock is certainly ticking. This is not something where you go out and run a help wanted ad and, you know, do the interviews in a week. And they do have some big decisions to make. So,
and among the decisions they have to make in addition to superintendent, and whether they do it before or after is immaterial, I suppose. But that student assignment, which we'll talk about when we come back, Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Van Mile Moving and Delivery, featuring on-demand local moving and delivery, small or large jobs accepted via smartphone in Charlotte, Raleigh, and Atlanta. More info at vanmile.com. And Ken Hoffman Edward Jones, financial advisor at 121 A Depot Street in Davidson. Additional information is available at edwardjones.com. Edward Jones, making sense of investing, member SIPC. Vice President Joe Biden decides not to run for president. Congressman Paul Ryan lays out conditions for becoming House Speaker. What these latest developments mean for the 2016 election and gridlock in Congress is the topic of the conversation in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter, or email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. We're coming right back.
And All Things Considered's story starts with the news.
Two women set to become the first female Army Rangers ever.
That day, we wanted to follow it with a conversation from a woman who was in the military.
So we just email everybody.
Whittle it down to one. We get her on the phone.
Welcome to the program, Sergeant Marquez.
Thank you very much, Audie.
I want to start just with your reaction.
There's more to every story on All Things Considered every afternoon.
All Things Considered, weekday afternoons from 4 to 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about education, about the school board election, which is impending, about some of the things the new school board will have to do, like, decide on a superintendent, and about pupil assignments, which we'll talk about next. We also asked on a social media question, what do you want to see from the next Charlotte-Mecklenburg school board? And you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at WFAE or email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Betty on Twitter, leadership is required, she says. Suzanne on Facebook says, I will absolutely be voting against our current chairperson, largely over the handling of the termination of Dr. Morrison. Student assignment. Lisa, there's a lot of talk about redrawing boundaries to diversify schools, and it's mind-numbingly complex as I was trying to figure it out. I just thought I would rather jump into a vat of acid than be on the school board and have to deal with this.
Yeah, it is complex. Even when you talk about things like proximity,
yes,
it gets really complex. Like, is, you know, close as public transportation or driving a car or, you know, all these things come into play.
Because it would seem to me if you're going to redraw the boundaries to diversify schools, and you're going to have and you're going to give equal weight to magnets and homeschools, it's going to require an incredibly complex formula, but also busing. Isn't it going to require busing to achieve this?
Well, I mean, when you're adding magnets, magnets certainly require a lot more transportation than if you're going to a school that's relatively close. And some magnets are relatively close to where folks live, obviously. But yes, I mean, transportation, they're looking at now, to save money, the district basically put these shuttle stops in for magnets. So you drop your child off at a closest school, and then, you know, the bus comes and picks them up and takes them away. And they were finding that it was hard for kids to do this, and harder for parents to get them there and things like that. So they want to add that back. And of course, that's going to take money. And if you add more magnets, transportation will likely take more money.
But busing is an interesting term, I think, because mm-hmm. especially when you add forced busing, you know, if the school bus takes your child to a school that you want them to go to, it's transportation. Right. And if they take your child to a school that you don't want them to go to, it's forced busing. So there is a huge amount of busing now. There was actually more busing after they took away the court-ordered desegregation plan. So unless you're going to sell all the school buses, there will be busing, whether it's good or bad.
And most candidates say they don't want busing. Does that mean they don't want transportation, or they want to be able to have kids to be able to walk to school, or they don't want to return to the era of busing?
They say they don't want increased busing from where it is now.
Although they also say they want choice to play a big role, and choice
requires more busing.
Exactly. Yes.
So phrase when there's nothing concrete on the table, everybody's for diversity. I mean, there's nobody out there who's saying, you know, I don't want my kids going to school with the kids of another color. Everybody wants diversity. It's how you define it. It's how you get to it. You know, everybody wants strong community schools in their neighborhood.
Have they defined the word diversity? What does it mean?
They tried to do that at their last meeting, and they aren't terribly – I mean, we know that it is a combination of economic, of race, of – potentially of achievement levels could be part of that definition.
And when we say race, is it black, white, or is it black, white, Hispanic, Asian, et cetera?
Well, it is all of those in the school district. And again, how you would define that, it used to be black and non-black when they had the court-ordered desegregation. And at that point, we really did kind of have a black and white school district. And now Hispanics, I think that's one of the interesting factors in this, is that they are a large and growing percentage of the population, and especially of the school population. They don't seem to have a really big visible voice in the public discourse. You know, we're not seeing...
Do we understand why?
Boy, it's, you know, by definition, to try to define a group that you don't know a lot about. I mean, language is certainly an issue, can be an issue for some of them, although many Hispanics speak excellent English.
Do the Spanish language newspapers or radio stations play a role in this at all? Do we know?
I think CMS tries hard to reach, to communicate to Spanish-speaking families. What we don't have is a politician. You know, we've never had, I don't think, a Hispanic school board candidate. There was someone who applied for the seat that Ruby Jones got appointed to and was actually, that was part of the discussion was, it sure would be nice to have a Hispanic school board member, but that wasn't how they went.
So. Well, Christy on Facebook, getting back to busing for a second, I want to see support for keeping the magnet school shuttle bus stops. I have been following the school board's recent discussion in regards to transportation and busing, and there will be a vote soon to eliminate magnet shuttle stops in favor of offering home neighborhood stops. Please do not eliminate shuttle stops.
And the board heard a similar message last week, and Eric Davis had said, okay, let's try to see if there are some shuttle stops that make sense, and you know, maybe we don't do away with all of them altogether. And there does seem to be at least a look at that before the vote is for total elimination.
So again, this sort of points to their challenges with communication, mm-hmm. because there is – this coming Tuesday, there's going to be a panel discussion that's supposed to be a really big deal. They've invited the mayors and council members and county commissioners from across the county to hear a presentation and discussion about how the whole community can unite around the demographic challenges and around student assignment. They've said this is a big thing to get us going. And then after that, there's going to be the meeting in which I am fairly certain they are going to take public comments about these shuttle stops and about the magnet changes. They've had a heck of a time settling on that. First, the meeting was going to be at 6. Now it's at 7:30. It's at an alternate location. It's at a Friendship Missionary Baptist Church on Bates Ford Road. So, and they kept saying there were or were not going to be comments. The latest from Ann Clark is that there will be comments starting at 7:30 at this church. I guarantee some people won't be there and will be upset.
So the board has been talking about a choice-based system. What does that mean? What would that look like?
I mean, one of the things, and a lot of this is, I mean, this is very hazy. This is kind of a draft of the theory about how you draw schools. But they were talking about, for example, you have zones, and CMS did do this 2002-2003, where that basically any school in this zone is a choice school. You can pick it, whether it's a magnet school or it's a home school that's not your home school.
Well, they want to give magnets and home schools equal value, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or equal footing.
Sure,
so
yes.
So if you live at this address and you're living in this zone, you can pick any of those schools you want to go to?
That's the idea.
Well, and you sort of have that now. You have an option of several magnets, and you have an option of your home school. And that's, then do you guarantee that you'll get your choice, which is very hard to do because – and they talk about having lottery systems that would balance and encourage diversity. And they also talk about having a really clear, transparent, and easy-to-understand lottery system – all of these things conflict with each other.
And it sounds increasingly complicated. To give a student an opportunity to attend a choice school within proximity, whatever that means, to where they live, it just multiplies the transportation issues. And
sure. And what about the schools that don't get chosen? You know,
yeah,
how do you deal with capacity issues?
Right.
And that was a problem back then.
And have they made any attempt to define the word proximity?
They tried. They tried to do that, and they did not get very, very far.
And somebody actually said, well, what if you just drew a map? One of the board members yeah. said, you know, what would it look like if you just literally sent every child to the closest school? And they kind of went.
And that's where the head of planning said, well, do you mean – closest by public transportation, closest by driving. And he said, just closest by the...
Drawing a circle on the map, I think, is what they were talking about.
Yeah, the crow flies.
Well, there's a third way, which we haven't talked about, boundaries for diversity, which calls for drawing school boundaries to, quote, provide diversity that aligns with the diversity of the school system as a whole. Wow. That calls for avoiding school poverty levels that are more than 10% higher than the district average. So wouldn't that mean a lot of shifting around? I mean, a lot of
shifting
around.
That's kind of the nuclear option. And it was interesting because Tom Tate, who I think is a fairly strong proponent of diversity, kind of – they actually didn't get to discussing that one. And Tom just kind of made this comment about we should just scrap that or something to that effect. So it's not clear if they're seriously considering it. I asked him, you know, is it eliminated or did you just not have time to get to it? And, you know, they haven't discussed that yet. So there's this – very controversial proposal on their written summary so far that they just haven't discussed.
What is driving this conversation and this desire to come up with some new plan for student assignment? Is it the recognition that we have essentially resegregated the schools since the end of busing to integrate them?
Yes.
That's what it is.
That is certainly part of what's. They also do a big review every 5 to 6 years.
Are they doing this because the parents are pushing for this, or that people in the community think that we should reintegrate the schools which have become segregated again? Or are they doing this for fear, out of fear, that the federal government will get involved again and break it up?
I have not heard fear of the federal government. And yes, I mean, this is a review. They try to review schools every 6 years because it can get really dicey as far as capacity issues. So, I mean, this is kind of part of that schedule. But yes, I mean, this board and you hear talk in the community, several groups have come together looking specifically at this issue of trying to put more diversity in schools because CMS does have schools that are very white, very African-American.
Very poor.
Very poor and low-performing schools.
And it is extremely clear that those schools, the high poverty, virtually no white students, face an unusual level of challenges. It is not equally clear that you can fix that by a certain pattern of shuffling kids around. And I think that's what you hear. Jeremy Stevenson, in particular, one of the candidates, says you're not hearing from it's not just the white suburban parents, it's the parents in those schools that have all those challenges are not marching to the school board and saying, give us a new student assignment.
Isn't this something that every public school system in the country is probably dealing with in some way or another? And aren't there best practices emerging from some of these systems where they've figured it out, or has nobody figured this out anywhere?
The latter. Yeah, nobody's got the perfect solution.
Well, doesn't that mean it can't be figured out? I don't mean to be the eternal pessimist here, but seriously, we have so many issues that on the table, at play, at the same time. It's like a puzzle that can't be put together.
I actually think that's the greatest, in some ways, the greatest civic and intellectual challenge with public education is how to avoid basically despair and cynicism, because if you like winning arguments, always take the side of this won't work. Let me tell you why. There are unfortunately so many examples of things that have failed to solve the big problems. And I wish I could remember who said it, but somebody said there's no 100% solution. There's a lot of 1% solutions. But you never sell a 1% solution. You sell a big solution.
Current Superintendent Ann Clark has laid out her plan for expanding seats in magnet schools. It's something the board has said it wants to do. Why?
There's certainly this feeling that, for example, there's competition with charter schools, and there are a lot of charter schools coming to this area.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. CMS board member Eric Davis believes that CMS should expand magnet programs without worrying about the impact on home or community schools. He sees this as a necessary way to win the competition that he feels the system is engaged in.
If parent and student demand is telling us we need a Montessori high school and a STEM K-8 school in the South and a language academy in the North, by God, let's do it. And let's frankly forget about the impact on our homeschools. I would never have said that a year ago. We've got to improve all our schools, and if that means turning more of our schools into Collinswoods and schools like that, so be it. Let's move on. That is our best strategy in competition with charters, and we are in competition, and by God, we will win.
Wow.
I mean that's certainly part of the argument for charters, and there's this tension, right, with magnets, that you have the growth of magnets, but how do you do that in a way that your homeschool doesn't suffer? So that'll be something the board has to get their minds around. But there's also, you know, the idea with magnets that this is a way to really provide diversity at schools.
I don't follow this like the two of you follow this. But when I hear Eric Davis, who I've known and spoken to on this program for a long time, and he used to be the chair of the school board, did he not?
Right.
When I hear him say that, and the way he said it, I'm hearing something different than I've heard in a long time, because all the superintendents that I've talked to on this program say that they embrace the charter schools, that the charter schools will make us better. In fact, the charter schools are taking money away from the public schools, so they, in fact, are in competition. But I heard an urgency in Eric Davis.
And if you're an advocate of charter schools, then that is a sign of success.
Yeah.
That's what they've always said, is that competition will force a school district that can be huge and slow and a bureaucratic behemoth to take on that sense of urgency. And if it succeeds, if they make better schools because of it, then yay, everybody wins.
Elena on Facebook writes, when will CMS stop practicing modified Jim Crow? These superfluous and poorly executed magnet schools aren't fooling those of us who are paying attention. Have you heard that comment before?
I'm kind of trying to parse it out and figure out exactly what it means. Certainly some of the magnets are racially identifiable, pretty strongly racially identifiable. I don't know if she's criticizing that or saying that the magnets distract from the fact that neighborhood schools are...
I have 30 seconds. Can you increase the number of magnets, make diversity a priority, protect homeschools, avoid busing, and compete with charters at the same time? That's what I'm hearing from out of this conversation. Can you do that?
There's a lot of conflicting tensions there, yes.
I mean, I think that's very challenging. That would be an understatement.
At the bottom of this is the need to close the performance gap. And Ann, you wrote on Sunday that we've done that here with minimal results. CMS leaders have urged patience. Some wonder, I suppose, how long we're supposed to wait for that, right? We heard from school board candidate Jeremy Stevenson on Facebook during this program, who says this candidate says every day, hire Ann Clark right now. Not vague process. Please correct Ms. David that no candidate has that position. He says, hire her now. Ann Doss Helms from the Charlotte Observer, Lisa Wharf from WFAE News. Thank you both for the hour. Appreciate it.